And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, Kia returns to the podium. The time that she's been sober, she's really doing the deal. She's one of the most active sponsors that I've witnessed. And she's involved at Triangle and Skyland. She really gets around. And so happy that she's come back to give us an update on her sobriety. Welcome back, Kia.
My name is Kia, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And just want to talk about a couple of things. My sobriety date is June 16th, 07. My sponsor is CC Garrison, who has a sponsor. I am involved in service work. I'm a member of NABR. My home group is Triangle, the Women's Big Book Study at 6:30 on Sundays. And today I have a relationship with my higher power, who I choose to call God. And I say these things for me because this is what is important to my sobriety today. So what it was like, I was born in Forest City, Arkansas, but I was not raised there. And growing up, being the middle child of a sister and a brother, we moved around a lot. And it's funny because when you become sober, you start to have more of a clear picture as to, you know, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And growing up in my household, I say we moved around a lot because when things hit the fan, when things got heated, it was time to pick up and go somewhere else. And in my household, there was a lot of drinking and carrying on with my aunts and my uncles. You know, they had parties, and I was right in the middle of it. You know, I wasn't one of those child that was out there. I played and, you know, what have you, but I wanted to be right in the middle where the fun was. And it was with the adults. And that just kind of happened all the time. And as we moved around a lot, when things got heated, my sister was the caretaker of myself and my brother. And she would make sure that we were fed and things like that. And when I look back at it today, I know that if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be where I am today. She's a big part of who I am today. And with that being said, as I'm going through life, you know, we're moving around a lot, and we decided to be in one place for some time, and that was in California. And I'll always be grateful for that, because with us moving around, it allowed me to see different places. Because being born in Arkansas and I lived there for some time, I just knew that I didn't want to live there when I became an adult, because it wasn't a lot of youth there, and it wasn't the place. If you wanted to make something of yourself, you can do that. So I'm always grateful that we did move around. So we were in San Diego, California. That's where I spent the majority of my, let's say, ages 10 to, you know, 18 there in California, in that area. And once again, you know, we're going through life. You know, I'm going to school, and, you know, they're still drinking and carrying on. I'm in the middle of it. And throughout all this, I've started to want to become who they were. So when they would drink and have parties, you know, after it was over, I would be the one that would go and drink out of half-empty beer cans. And I think I was 8 years old maybe at this time, just to kind of back up. And with that being said, I was doing that, and with me doing that, I picked up a beer can and I drank out of it, and it had spit in it. So you would have thought that, you know, that would have prohibited me from doing that, but I just thought, you know, maybe I just better look inside the beer can next time to make sure that there's nothing aside from that in there. And being in that type of atmosphere, they were smoking cigarettes, you know, they were smoking, you know, other things as well. And I just wanted to feel the way they felt, because I saw the change come over them once, you know, they had the drink and they had other things that went with that. And they looked like they were having a good time. So watching them do this, I saw them smoke cigarettes. So I thought, you know, I'm going to try that. So I stole a pack of my stepfather's cigarettes, and I'm the same age, and I smoked the whole pack by myself. And why I did that, I do not know, but I just knew that I don't even think I felt anything, you know, when I did that. I just wanted to try because I saw them doing it. So that was pretty much what I had to grow up into. As time is passing, as I'm getting older, you know, when the funds were low, you know, things weren't good. You know, there were times where we didn't have heat, we didn't have food, we didn't have water, and, you know, we would just have to pick up and just keep moving around when things got heated. And with that being said, when my sister got of age, she was like out. She left. You know, she just got her stuff and she went. And she wanted to take my brother and I with her, but of course, my mother wouldn't let that happen because we were the resources. We were the children that allowed her to be able to have the funds, so she wasn't going to let that happen. So when she left, it was like, man, you know, what does that mean for my brother and I? Well, that meant that I had to take on the responsibility. And I had no idea what she had to take on and what she had encountered until the weight was put on my shoulders. So I'm 16, my brother and I, and we're in California. And at this time, we're living with my aunt. And, you know, the parties would be in the middle of the living room. They would be out in the open. And for some odd reason, they started to graduate into the bedroom. All the adults would be in one room. And they would be in there for a long time. And we would be out there playing. And we knew that they were doing something else other than what they were doing when they were out in the middle of the, you know, the living room carrying on or what have you. So with that being said, this particular day, they were in there for a long time. And my mother called my brother and I, and she said, we're leaving. So mind you, we're staying with my aunts and uncles. Where are we going to go? So we get in the van, and she decides to leave. And I just simply remember asking her a question. I don't remember what it was. And I asked her, and I just knew that she just hit me so hard in my face. And I was just like, wow. So we're in this van. You know, we're going nowhere. We don't know where we're going to be going. And at this point, we're homeless, basically, because we didn't go back to my aunts and uncles because she had a falling out with them, and she had nowhere else that she knew where she was going. So my brother and I, we were in school, so we had to, I think it was a couple of weeks we were homeless in this van. We had to change our school clothes in this van, go to school, and I had to act as if things were okay. And at that point in my life, I knew that this wasn't a lifestyle that I wanted for myself when I got of age. So I always told myself, when I get 18, I'm going to make something of myself. And when I got 18, I decided to leave. I had always told my mother that, you know, I'm going to leave. So when I got 18, I decided to go to college. And I had a girlfriend, and we were talking about it. And she suggested Atlanta because she had been here before. And I was like, okay, I've lived in California. You know, I've been here. I want to go somewhere where, you know, I don't know anyone, where I haven't been before. And I decided to come 18 right out of high school to Atlanta for college. So the college I chose to go to was in fashion merchandising, which is buying and selling, and that's the industry that I'm in today. It was a two-year college. And, you know, I'm going to school, I'm going to classes, I'm going out, I'm drinking. I remember when I turned 21, one of my coworkers decided to buy me my first grown-up drink because I was legal. And, of course, when I drank that, I puked my brains out. I said, you know, I'm not going to drink this anymore because I feel like crap. Of course, that didn't stick because I ended up drinking again. And, you know, I'm going through school, and we would go out on the weekends and party and drink. You know, nothing too crazy, just typical college kids, you know, stuff. And, you know, towards the end of school, it was finals. And when, you know, we had to take finals, I went and I was not prepared, but I went and I was prepared to take the finals. And on one of the finals, I decided to cheat. So, of course, the woman called me, but she allowed me to take the final again. And when I took the final, I got a D. And at that time, a D was considered passing, but they changed it and said you had to have a C. So I was discouraged because I wasn't able to graduate. But, you know, the amazing thing of this program is I had already gotten my ticket to go back to California because I always told myself, Kia, if you don't try, how will you ever know? And with that being said, I was prepared to go back, but I got an offer at a job that I was working at part-time while I was in college. So they decided they would hire me full-time. So I decided to stay in Atlanta. So I decided to start working at this place where I'm still employed at today full-time. So I started working there. I worked my way up. I got an apartment, and I was just, you know, going through life, working my way up at this job. And I got offered a sales position. I moved up. We have a store in New York, went to open that store. Long story short, I'm engaging with my coworkers. I've met some new people who's come to work, and we decided to start hanging out. So I would hang out with these people, and we would go out, you know, during the weekend. It could be on someone's birthday and celebrate. And we did that for a while. You know, I was able to drink and hang out, nothing, you know, too serious, and be, you know, prepared for work come Monday. Well, we all know that didn't last. So, of course, you know, as time progressed, you know, I got to the point to where I was going out with these group of people that I work with, and I wasn't showing up to work. And, you know, I always told myself, if you're going to go out and drink and play, then you have to be responsible enough to make sure you're at work. That didn't happen. So I stopped showing up to work. You know, I started calling out a lot. And, I mean, you know, no one really noticed until it got noticeable enough to where I was starting to isolate. You know, I wasn't the same person. You know, my numbers started to fall, and people were starting to become concerned. And I still didn't know that it was as out of control as everyone else had knew it was. So this was going on for a while. And then it got to the point to where I just wasn't calling. I wasn't showing up. People were scared to death. They didn't know if I was, you know, alive or dead. And finally, my boss was at his wit's end. He called me in the office, and he was like, I just don't know what I'm going to do with you. He was like, I know that I can't stop your paycheck from coming in, because if I do that, if I keep doing it, that's going to enable you, but by law, I can't do that. So then he decided that he would drug test me. So, you know, we tried that, and he said, I'm going to do it on a time where you're not going to know about it. I'm just going to come to you and say, you go to this place to be drug tested. And I was like, okay. Kicking and screaming, crying, please don't fire me. You know, this is not going to happen again. I promise I'll be at work and, you know, what have you. And so he did that one time. I went, and, of course, I had went out, and I was drinking and carrying on and doing other things, and I was scared to death, like, God, what can I do to, you know, not fail this drug test? So I went, and by, you know, the grace of God and, you know, God itself, I passed. So that was like, whew, you know, I don't have to deal with that. So I'm still going to work and, you know, once again, having to do the same thing, being drug tested. So it got to a point to where I wasn't showing up to work to have the drug test to take it. It got to that point, and my boss was just like, I just don't know, Kia, I just don't know. You know, I'm ready to basically fire you. And when it got to that last time where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know, I basically was at this place with these people, and, you know, it was how it was when I was a child. I was drinking out of half-empty beer cans, and I was smoking cigarettes nonstop, and I was too afraid to leave from where I had been for a couple of days. And at that point, I was just like, God, just please tell me what it is that you want me to do, because I don't want to do this anymore. And I had called on God before, sweet promises, just get me out of this, just get me out of that. But this time, I meant it. I was serious. And for some odd reason, I heard this voice that said, kid, it's going to be okay. You know, the gig is up. You don't have to, you know, go along with this double person, you know, being one way this way at work and being another way outside of work. So I was ready to face all the consequences behind my actions. I went to work after, you know, not showing up to work at 3 days at a time. And that was when my boss said what he said. And he was like, I'm sending you home. He was like, I can tell you that you're not going to have a job to come back to, because I don't know. And he said, you need help. You need rehab. You know, because he had suggested AA before. He even called the AA hotline, and I went to a meeting, but I just thought, oh, you know, I don't have a problem with drinking. I have a problem with other things, and, you know, I didn't work the program, basically. So he gave me our insurance pamphlet and said, you know, you need help. I don't know what else to do with you. So that day I went home and I went through the insurance booklet and I came across Peachford. I called Peachford and I went in and had an assessment done. And they asked you all these questions. And I answered the questions as honestly and, at, you know, to the best of my ability. And the woman, you know, she sat down, she talked to me and she said, you know, you're more outpatient than you, than you are inpatient. So she gave me this piece of paper and I left there and I took the piece of paper and I had one of my coworkers come out and put this piece of paper put this piece of paper on my boss's desk. So it was there. And I got a phone call from him. It was a couple of days later because, mind you, I'm not knowing if I have a job to go back to or not. But I'm okay because it was like I put everything on the line, but I knew it was going to be okay because I was going down. I was going down fast, and I knew that something had to change. And if it took losing a job or what have you, that was what it needed to happen. I was okay with that. And as a couple of days went by, I just went to meetings, and people from work called me. How could you do this? You know, you're throwing your life down the tubes. You know, you work so hard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all I can do is just go to meetings. And he finally called me. He said, okay, I'm ready to come. I'm ready for you to come in and talk to you. So I came in and he set me down and he said, you know, I'm very impressed with what you did. He said it took a lot of courage. He was like, I was ready to let you go. But he's like, I'm willing to give you one last try. Now, mind you, I had signed so many pieces of paper saying this time, if it happened again, I would be let go. And he was like, I just don't know. He's like, I'm not sold on the, he's like, just the outpatient, I think you need therapy. And he was like, you know, you got to give me something to go on. So I said, okay, I'm willing to do whatever it is that you suggest I need to do. So I went to therapy. I started doing that 2 days out the week. I went to, I don't know how many meetings, you know, at a time, more than 90 meetings, you know, in 90 days. And with going to therapy, I had to have a piece of paper signed to show him that I had attended therapy. And, you know, therapy is private. So, you know, my therapist was like, Kia, this is very confidential. You know, I want to make sure this isn't lying around anywhere. And she would put that in the little piece of paper that I had to give to him. And, you know, with going to meetings and stuff, you know, I heard keep coming back one day at a time, you know, get a sponsor. So I kept coming back and I would watch. And I saw this woman, she had this glow to her and she was reaching out to others. She was involved in service work. She was just, it was something about her. I went up and I asked her if she could be my sponsor. She couldn't take me on at that time, which discouraged me, but I was desperate. I was willing. So I agreed to get a temporary sponsor. And I asked her, as some time passed, could she take me on? And she was able to. So I started working with her. And she shared her experience, strength, and hope with me. We met. She, you know, she sat with me. She took me through the book. We talked. And she started to take me through the steps. And when we got to step one, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. She was, I knew at that point that I was powerless over it. I couldn't control it. You know, my life was unmanageable. I had said that saying that I said when, you know, I hit my bottom. And I, you know, I was convinced. And I, you know, shared with her, I was like, yes, honestly and true honest, I am powerless over this. When we got to step two, came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore us to sanity, she was like, kid, just believe that I believe, you know, with her sharing her experience, strength, and hope, because the fog was so heavy on my brain that all I can do is go on what I saw someone else doing. When we got to step three, you know, made a decision, she was like, just have, you know, some faith, just be willing. You know, and when we got to step four, made a certain and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, I was like, wow. You know, she suggested to me how I work a fourth step. And when I went to work my fourth step, I picked up the pen and my hand was shaking and I was just like crying because I was like, I'm about to reveal all of this that I've kept deep down inside to me. But it was a relief because I was like, I don't have to keep this inside of me anymore. When we did a fifth step, I worked the fifth step with her, and she started crying. And I was looking at her. I said, why are you crying? I'm the one that should be crying. And she was like, because, you know, what your mother did to me, I was that mother to, you know, how I treated my kids. And all along, I'm going through life thinking I'm so unique. I'm the only person that's went through what I've went through. No one can understand, you know, where I've been, where I've come from. And it was like, no, someone else, you know, shared my exact same story. You know, step six, when she helped me, you know, make my defects of characters list, it was so long. I was like, oh my God, all these things are wrong with me. And she was like, Kia, you know, this is for you to be aware of, for you to see. You know, you can ask for help to help. To help have some of them removed. And I was like, ooh, okay, because this is like, you know, this is not good to see all of this on the paper about me. So with that being said, say step seven, you know, ask to have it, you know, removed. And step eight, you know, my list of people who I had harmed. We made that, when we got to step nine, we put these people in different lists as to who I can make amends to now, you know, later, instead, and never. And she said, just do the easiest people now. And what came to mind to me were some of my coworkers, my cousin, of course, because we lived together, my cousin and I, and he was with me when I was going through what I needed to go through, and he just threw his hands up because he couldn't even look at me. When I wasn't coming home, he didn't know if I was dead or alive. He couldn't even look me in the face. It was like living with, you know, a stranger or what have you. So he was someone that I needed to make my living amends to. So long story short, I made my amends to the people that was easiest. I chose to make my amends to my boss at my second year because he needed to see through my behavior, my actions, that I meant business and not, I'm so sorry, this isn't going to happen again. And when we got to, you know, step 10, step 10 was a way for me to look at, you know, my behavior throughout the day. When things would come up, I would know how to, you know, talk about it with someone, you know, reach out to help somebody else. And step 11, she suggested I start praying without having to, you know, have started to work this step. She was like, just hit your knees and just ask whoever you believe in to help keep you sober. That was something that she did suggest early on when she started to work with me. And step 12, you know, having had a spiritual awakening, I just know for me, after I made my first amends, something happened. You know, my thinking was different. I was going through the day, and I was like, man, I'm not thinking about taking a drink or anything else. How is this possible? You know, the obsession was lifted for me. And, you know, it's funny how with me going to all those meetings and, you know, still going to meetings or what have you, my sponsor decided at that time to relocate. So once again, I was, you know, having to make a decision to keep her as a long-distance sponsor or get someone here. And we're going to those meetings. I heard this woman on two different occasions, and how she spoke and just how she, you know, talked about this program. I was like, wow, if the opportunity ever presented itself, I want this woman to sponsor me. Guess what happened? It did. I hunted this woman down. I went through everything I could go through to get in contact with this woman. And when I finally got in contact with her, she agreed to meet with me. And when I say she interviewed me, she interviewed me. She asked me, she made suggestions to me. She said, you call and check in every day for 30 days. And of course, I just, you know, balked at that. I was like, what do you mean? I'm a grown woman and I don't have to do this and da 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 da. But she has 20 something plus years sober, so why would I not want to do what she suggests I do? Apparently, she's doing something that's working for her. And if I want what she has, then I'm willing to do the same. So it was some other things that she suggested, but she also suggested, are you working with others? Because I had a year at this time, and having a year, I was involved in service work, working with others, and I said yes. She goes, because if you weren't, then I couldn't take you on as a sponsee, because it's imperative that we work with others. So with that being said, she said, we write the steps out. Once again, we went through the steps again, and I wrote them out. And pen to paper is truth. It's no lie. I mean, my life has changed so much. And the first year I was sober, you know, the promises do come true. I went to New York, my first trip sober. And I went to visit a girlfriend who I hadn't seen in a while, and I needed to make an amends to her. So I went there. It was 4th of July, and she knew I was in the program, and I spent time with her. And, you know, we went out, and we danced, and we had a great time. And I was, I was sober. Still am sober, and people just want to know, how are you able to be around this drinking and carrying on and you're sober and not be upset that, you know, you can't drink? And, you know, I said, I've had my time doing that. You know, it doesn't work for me anymore. You know, I'm able to be a part of it and not allow it to affect me. And they was like, man, that says a lot. And, you know, that's big of you. And, wow, you know, they just wanted to praise me. But long story short, I had a great time. When they were all in the other room hungover, you know, sweeping the clock around, I got up and I went and I walked to, I forget what park it is, and I had my literature with me because I took my literature with me. And it was just an amazing experience to be able to travel, you know, sober. So once again, I'm working and things are going good, and I'm working with my new sponsor. I'm working the steps and I'm proving myself at work, and the opportunity presented itself for me to make my amends to my boss. So I called him outside and we sat down and I said, you know, I made my amends to him, and he was like, I'm very proud of you. Now, I've definitely, you know, saw the change in you. And he was like, I'm just glad that you're okay. So work is going good, and, you know, we had Fashion Week, and, you know, we had a fashion show and all that, and I got invited to it. That was something that I always wanted to do, but I couldn't stay sober long enough, and my credit wasn't good at work, so of course they're not going to invite me to Fashion Week in New York. And, you know, that's the gift to this program. The invitation, you know, extended itself, and I went to Fashion Week in New York sober. So, you know, to be there, to be with a client, and to be in the mix, the midst of all that excitement, you know, that's just because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of the promises. So moving forward, you know, I'm working, you know, things are going good, and the promises are coming true or what have you. And basically what it's like today is, because of this program, I've now went to Puerto Rico with two girlfriends in the program. Hadn't ever been anywhere like that before, sober. You know, I got to do that. You know, I'm going to Paris. You know, hadn't ever been able to do anything like that sober. You know, I get to do this because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going back to school. You know, it's very important to have a sponsor and to inventory yourselves and to work the steps, because when I met with my sponsor, telling her how, you know, school and all that went about, she goes, you know, you can go back to school. And I was like, yeah, I thought about it. It's in the back of my head. I'm thinking maybe when I retire, I'm so busy, you know, fear crops and all of that. And she goes, you should do this. This is going to be good for you. So I went and did the necessary things that I need to do, and I'm going to be going back to school. And that's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, this year has just been so amazing, because this year I've had to let some people go, and that's been hard for me because I have, you know, other defects that I struggle with, and the book suggests that, you know, we seek outside help or other programs, so that's what I've had to do. I've had to venture into another program. And, I mean, my life has just changed so much because, you know, it helps me to set boundaries, to not people please, to, you know, be able to communicate with people and to take up for myself, because that was something that I didn't ever do. You know, I didn't think I had a right to speak up for myself or to say anything. It was just best to, you know, keep quiet. Even though I was just bawling, I was full of anger, you know, I was just dying inside how I was when I came into, you know, these rooms. And what a blessing it is to wake up today sober, you know, to have this free grace, to not have the obsession, you know, on me heavily. And to be able to work with someone else to give away, you know, what has been given to me, to watch them, you know, come to and see the light, you know, go off in them. It's just a blessing, because the book talks about not being selfish and things like that, and our thoughts will be, you know, placed on others. And I didn't ever think that was possible for me, because I'm like, huh, I'm going to think about other people and how can I best, you know, meet their needs and all this stuff. And it's like, no, you know, I didn't ever think that was possible, but because of this program, it is possible. You know, because of, you know, having a relationship with my higher power and Alcoholics Anonymous, only is this possible. So I just want to read something from a vision from you, because to me it just sums up this program in a nutshell, and it is on the last page. Just skipping down a couple paragraphs, it says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your thoughts to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. So, for me, where I am today, you know, I try to stay in the middle of this program. I try to stay involved in as much service work as I can. I work with a lot of people, and I stay in the steps. You know, I have a sponsor who I run things by because I can't go off my own thinking. You know, my thinking will tell me that, oh, it's okay. You know, you've been doing good. You know, you can take a drink. And my history proves that that's just not the case. You know, so I just want to thank you guys for inviting me to tell my story, because my sponsor says, kid, you get invited to tell your story. And, you know, I want to keep being able to tell what it's like now. You know, I don't ever want to have to add to what it was like. You know, I always want to be able to, you know, to add to what it's like now. And I love coming to meetings because I hear what it's like now. I hear people sober, living life, you know, going through things, getting through it sober. And that gives me faith, and that gives me hope, and doing different things that they always wanted to do but maybe wasn't able to because they weren't sober. And it's like, man, they did that. You know, I can do that too. So I don't have anything else to say, so I'm going to end with that. But thank you guys for allowing me to let you to get to know me.
Okay, thank you, Kia. And Tinsley's going to give out the chips.
We gave him a couple of weeks off.
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Kia, for telling your story. I really enjoyed that. Here at this meeting, we have a chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you'd like to try this way of life one day at a time, we offer a white chip. Would anybody like to pick up a white chip? Anybody else for a white chip? To 30 days, we have a silver chip. So we got 30 days. Red chip for 90 days. Anybody got 90 days? Yellow chip for 6 months. Who's got 6 months? Green chip for 9 months. Anybody got a birthday? 1 year or multiples? And the only chip we offer twice is the white chip. Would anybody like to reconsider on the white chip? Big hand for the chips you hold.
Thanks, Tinsley. If there are no further announcements, I remind you that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Just another homesick child. Some mercy tonight. I can't make it through this fight all alone. But oh, get on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. As I try to make some sense of this world I'm up against, well, I know my best defense is your love. When the struggle gets insane and the lessons fall of pain, keep me calling out your name with love. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. From the bottom of my heart, and I'm searching for one star to shine. I will shout from mountain high, and I'll reach into the sky till you open up my eyes so blind. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt.